Welcome to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese. Composer Tom Salta recently finished music for Eric Chahi's new game. It's a game called From Dust. In From Dust, you control the earth and all sorts of other elements like lava and water and fire, all in an attempt to create a livable environment for a tribe. Each motion in the game reacts musically, making for a great listening experience on top of an already great gaming experience. Tom Salta is no stranger to scoring games, having scored both Red Steel games, he did both Hawks games, he did Prince of Persia, The Forgotten Sands, and many more. Well, let me officially thank you for your time. It's wonderful to talk to you, and so thanks for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Emily. I'm really excited to be here.
Good. So you just finished up a project for a game called From Dust, and From Dust came out on the Xbox, I believe, in August, and it just came out for PlayStation in September. How were you approached about this project? It's a unique game.
Oh, yes, it is. I was approached by some colleagues that I've worked with for many, many years at Ubisoft that I've worked on a plethora of different titles over the years, a huge variety of projects. So I had an established relationship with them. And it's such a unique project that they called me and they told me about it. And I was immediately fascinated and thrilled to hear who the creative director was, Eric Chahi.
Mm-hmm.
As a longtime avid player of video games, from when I was a kid, I remember one of the biggest games that where I first heard his name, which was called From Another World, released in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember playing that, and it was so different, and it was so otherworldly. And I still vividly remember that game to this day. And then fast forwarding 20 years later, having the opportunity to work with the same visionary guy who did that, that was thrilling. It was also a little intimidating because I'm like, okay, I know he doesn't do things the normal way.
Right.
This is going to be an interesting ride. And it got even more interesting as we got into the nuts and bolts of it and they started telling me what they had in mind.
What did they tell you?
Well, the first thing was they were trying to explain this thing to me. You know, without having seen the game, trying to understand what they were talking about was a bit daunting at first. They're telling me, well, you know, it's a game that... as you're playing, there's rhythms throughout the environment, but the rhythms aren't really scoring the game. They're actually created in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, different rhythms and textures will represent different things that happen and different powers. And I'm going, I'm like, okay, I'm trying to think in my, encyclopedia of other games I've played. There's nothing like that. So I couldn't even refer to anything. And they're saying, well, there's always a set tempo. It's always at 120 BPM and there's a pulse through, and I'm like, okay. And I said, is there music, like tonal music? And like, well, not really. There's, there'll be a theme, but the theme will be completely different. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm thinking maybe I can do something more cinematic and epic. And they're like, well, we wanted to do something that was very, very minimalistic and very even-keeled and not really emotional, kind of not happy, not sad, kind of indifferent, kind of removed from the environment. So... something like more like a Philip Glass. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, it was a little scary at first, but I was fascinated because I always gravitate towards things which are completely different. And I bring this on myself, I think. Every project I do practically is so different than the one before it.
It seems that way, yes.
So I truly embraced this, but I got to say, it was unbelievable. I mean, the conversations we had, I'm like, you mean like this? No. How about like, no? Well, not exactly. Well, do you know what you want?
Yeah.
So, So it was a wonderful adventure, and evolved from there, and we did some experimentation. But that was how it all started.
You said just a moment ago they actually gave you a tempo. They told you 120 beats per minute is the tempo of the rhythms in the game.
It was the tempo for everything.
For everything.
It was the tempo for the rhythms. It was the tempo for the theme. It was
the tempo
for the transition music. It was a universal tempo,
wow.
Kind of like nature has a universal set of laws.
Right.
And this whole environment, this whole parallel universe, tribal, primitive thing was governed by the power of music and rhythm.
Wow.
So the concept was really out of the box, and I was truly fascinated by the how it would really work in the end. And of course, I had all kinds of questions, and how are we going to, you know, well, is it going to be interesting enough? Is there going to be enough emotion? I mean, are we going to drive people crazy if we're just listening to beats all the time? How are you going to distinguish, you know? I started playing early ideas for my father-in-law, and he's sitting there. He loves music, and he was sitting there nodding his head. He's like, so where's the music? I was like, well, that's it. Don't you get it? You know. But as we got into the project, I started really understanding and going, aha, oh, okay. You know, and when I started seeing some of the concept art and some of the initial demos of the playable game, when they came over, actually, Eric and the whole audio team came from Paris, and they came to my home studio. We spent a whole day in my studio, and they played me. He actually brought a working prototype of the game, and that's when the light bulb started going off. I'm like, okay, all right. You know, I get it. You know, that's really where I started getting a good grip on it, and then that's when we started. We had the recording sessions with my good friend Bashiri Johnson, and we recorded with Kamadi Dinuzulu. We started creating all these wonderful, unique, primitive, tribal things that don't really sound like anything you're used to hearing.
You know, you've touched on this a couple of times since we started talking, the fact that initially it seems, if you're not quite paying attention as you're playing through the game, it seems like there's not a lot of music in the game. But then you realize that everything you're doing, every single action, the powers, every motion is all music. And it's just a listening pleasure to play that game.
Thank you. It's very interesting. You know, it's like life. There's always something going on. There's always music going on. It's just where you're listening and where you are and what your perspective is. You know, if you're zoomed out like a bird view looking down on this, you're not going to really hear anything. But if you start to zoom in to a village or to a person walking, you notice there's a rhythm that's accompanying him, or he's kind of talking to himself with the rhythm, like, you know, we came up with like a little fake imitation language. And if you go into the village itself, there's a music, and they have like a what we'll call like the quiet village music, where it's just the whole hum of daily life, and there's music going on there. But at the same time, in the same tempo, there could be another village that's dealing with a tsunami, and the same pulse and the same tempo, they're repelling that tsunami, but everything blends together in this constant, you know, music that is creative depending on where you are and what your perspective is.
Do you have a percussion background?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I've always gravitated towards percussion. It's something that has always come instinctually to me, even as a young boy. I just love it. I never really took formal percussion training. I took certainly a lot of music training. My mother taught me piano from when I was a young boy. But when it comes to percussion, I never studied. I never played drums. I've always been a glorified finger drummer, right? From when I was in eighth grade and I got my first drum machine or my first synthesizer, I was creating beats and everything just using those kind of tools.
Uh-huh.
Over the years, it's just been something that I didn't really pay much attention to until I started getting calls from other recognized producers and people to ask me to do their percussion or their drum tracks. And I started going, I wonder why. I mean, it just feels so naturally to me. But then I started getting a little more insight from their perspective. And I noticed a lot of traditional composers don't really like doing the percussion. It's almost like a burden to them. It's like they just want to rush through it and get on to the music. I don't know. For me, I enjoy staying in that world a little bit longer. I enjoy finessing the percussion and building it and make it textural and detailed. And I don't know. It's just a vocabulary for me that I enjoy speaking.
You mentioned that you got to work with some friends of yours. You mentioned Bashiri Johnson, and I didn't catch the other name, but who did you get to work with on From Dust?
When I learned what the project would require, I said, okay, I really need to bring in some of the best people that I know that can think out of the box and truly create one-of-a-kind sonic textures, but using the vocabulary of percussion and things like that. And it just so happens that a good friend and colleague of mine is someone named Bashiri Johnson. Bashiri Johnson really established himself many, many, many years ago, being a first call, you know, session percussionist and going on tours. In fact, he was on the last Michael Jackson tour. So he's known around the world to do what he does. And he's got sample libraries out there. And he lives on the East Coast, where I do.
Yes.
And so he's the first person I called, and I started telling him about the project and saying how we really had to use percussion as the main language of this game. And, you know, he got all excited, and I said, okay. So I said it didn't really have to be any particular ethnicity. It didn't have to sound African, but it had to sound very primal. That being said, certainly Africa is at the root of much of our, you know, percussive vocabulary. And I said, so Bashiri, if it wasn't you, who would you hire, you know, that was a specialist in African percussions and things like that? And he mentioned, he said, Kamati Dinizulu. I said, sounds good to me. Let's get him on the phone. So I arranged to have a session with them both in the same room at the same time. I said, you know, something great has got to happen here. And that's where we had an exploratory recording session that initially, before I worked on the project, I wanted to show them some of the ideas and explorations that we came up with. So I told them to bring their vans of toys, but to keep all the high-tech gear out of this. No metal, nothing that you wouldn't find on a deserted primitive tribal island with no technology. I said, so let's focus on things that you would just find materials. Let's focus on wood and shells and skins and whatever, you know, any natural things that you didn't have to manufacture. We started just coming up and experimenting with different rhythms and textures to evoke different moods, and that's where it all began. It was a fascinating journey that I really didn't know what to expect at first.
Sure.
Kamati was playing with brooms on things and blowing into seashells and horns, and Bashiri was taking out his 1,000-year-old pea pods and all these weird, you know, things that you don't imagine would be used to create music on its own.
Right.
And that's what it really was. How do we create something out of the percussive language that will become a musical tapestry for to support gameplay?
You whipped out a didgeridoo, didn't
yes.
you?
We actually did, so to speak. So, here it is.
Yeah.
So, I contacted a good friend of mine who I've worked with several times over in Switzerland. His name is Sandro Frederick, and he's a fantastic wind player, very versatile, plays a lot of different things. That was towards the end of the project. We kind of knew what we wanted by that point. And I said, okay, we need to use the didgeridoo to represent the initial creation of the power, the dust that you're going to use as like the cursor on the screen. And that was to be done by having, I think it was four different individual didgeridoo parts that start one at a time, that get layered in the same rhythm with an udu. You know, they had some specific ideas in mind and how to do this. And it just took a little bit of experimentation to kind of find exactly what he had in his head. And we did it.
That's great. Another thing you mentioned earlier, I noticed that the beginning theme of the game sounded like Philip Glass. It's very minimalistic and beautiful and kind of a lot like water, right? I mean, it's just musical water in a good way. But the music of the gameplay is that tribal initial style that everything came from, right? And so I just thought, what a brilliant pairing. I wonder if they realized this.
Someone realized this, yes. It was... But you do your homework for sure, Emily. I got to tell you, absolutely, you picked that up. And indeed, Philip Glass was the only name that Eric ever mentioned as a reference. And I have to admit, it caught me off guard because I gravitate towards music that is more hooky and memorable and bigger and more dynamic and goes places and takes you on these journeys. Whereas, you know, the Philip Glass stuff that I've been familiar with over the years has kind of just has more of an ongoing, unchanging, you know, and I immersed myself in Philip Glass music and I watched a documentary on his life. And what we ended up doing and why we did it is that he wanted music to represent several things. One of the things was the passage of time. And it just so happened that it worked that if we do something that had a pulse of 60 beats per minute, you know, double that, 120, right away you're already into a very natural tempo. You know, it's the tempo of the clock. We hear that, we live every second by every day. It's that's the tempo.
Yeah.
I'm like, what emotion do you want? Do you want to be happy? Do you want to be sad? Do you want it to be intimidating? Do you want it to be... And they're like, well, no, none of that. Okay,
thanks
so
that
I understand,
direction.
And you thank you very much. Hanging up cold sweat, you know. Then I started listening to the Philip Glass, and I realized, okay, it's just there. It's indifferent. He just wanted to be indifferent. It is what it is. With nature, and that's what the whole point of the game is, to, you know, these primitive villages and people were supposed to reconnect with their past and to figure out ways to be at one with nature. And I think it all clicked for me one day when I'm really experimenting with all these 16th notes, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I getting into here? And then outside it was fall, and the gardeners were blowing the leaves, and I'm on the second floor in my home studio, and I noticed all these leaves blowing up past the window, and I'm seeing a blue sky and these leaves just blowing, and I'm listening to the music, and it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then it all clicked. Like, there it is. I get it.
Well, it was just a brilliant idea. And it just, it works so well. It really works well. So good on you.
Thank you.
Clearly, writing music for From Dust was drastically different than the previous games you've scored. So of the huge variety of games that you've written for, what have been some of your favorite projects?
I've had favorite moments in almost everything that I've worked on, but if I had to pick one project that kind of encompassed and was most closely aligned with who I am or what I like doing, probably Red Steel is definitely one of my favorites. Prince of Persia had so many things in there that, I mean, that it was like, I've always dreamed about doing this piece right here. But if I had to pick one, I'd say Red Steel.
I seem to always gravitate towards things that take me on these journeys of variety. Red Steel, in so many ways, epitomized that because there are so many styles from cue to cue in there that it almost became an ongoing joke. They almost started taking advantage of it, where I, you know, they do almost one level at a time, and they're like, okay, what are we going to throw at him today? So one day, it might be what you might expect in a game like that, where it was an epic choral Japanese piece with big percussion. And then the next minute, it might be an intimate piece just played on a single koto. And then the next minute, it might be an 80s Gap Band inspired funk track. And then it might go into killer circus music. And then it'll go, literally, and this score, and then it'll go into hip hop, and then it'll go into rap, and then it'll go into J-pop.
Wow.
And what I loved about it was like a roller coaster ride of challenges, but it was also an adventure. So, I mean, it was scary going through it, but after going through it, it was a rush.
Loved the music you wrote for Prince of Persia. It was very, I guess, otherworldly. And being exposed to that and then hearing what you did for From Dust, it gave me the impression that you had all this background in world musics. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, first of all, I have to admit that Prince of Persia has been a long, long, long time dream of mine. When I did have the opportunity to work on that game, it was like the culmination of years of mental preparation and just wow, the curtain has finally opened and I get to do some things that I've dreamed about doing. The first thing is I met with the team in Quebec and they were incredible. And I sat with the creative director and the audio director and the producer. And I think they saw the passion I had oozing. I couldn't help it. I was playing the game like, oh my God, this reminds me of The Sands of Time. It was my favorite Prince of Persia game and I love this about it. But we quickly established some parameters. And one of the things that was surprising and almost welcome was the fact that they consciously decided that we were going to not do an orchestral score.
Mm.
And we were not going to do anything that had any modern electronic in it. Now, those are two things I'm very comfortable with. I seem to always gravitate towards things that are more artistic and not as normal, traditional, what you expect score-like. I wanted to treat it more like, how would Peter Gabriel approach this score? Listening to Peter Gabriel's score to The Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, what a great album that is.
Where I wanted to live. How do we do this without any string sections? How do we do this with just textures and moods and percussion and eclectic instruments? There is a wonderful aside that I have to tell you about this. It was 7 years in the making. I'm always, again, listening to things that are out of the box and unique. And when I was out in San Francisco, about 7 years ago-ish now, I was walking around GDC outside, and I heard this music coming from a street performer.
And I was like, what is that? It didn't sound like, I'm like, I wasn't sure what, it wasn't a harp. It wasn't, it sounded like a, almost like a singing sword. It was like metal being rubbed. And I had it, you know, in my mind because I was, Prince of Persia has always been a dream of mine, as I said. And I was thinking, that kind of texture would be amazing. And so I followed my ears and he was sitting right in front of the convention center. And I sat there for 15 minutes just listening to this dude. I went up to him in between. I introduced myself. And I have to say, I bought both of his CDs and I gave him my card and I took his card. I said, listen, you know, Michael Maisley, it's a pleasure to meet you. And I just want to let you know that one day, if I ever get a chance to do this one game, which I hope that I have the chance to do, I'm going to be calling you.
You got to be kidding me. This
no,
is how this happened.
No, this is no joke. This is no wow. joke. So fast forward about 7 years, I remember the day that I was awarded the project and I emailed him. I said, remember that project? I met you and I said, I got it. Let's do this. And, you know, he was really excited about it.
Sure.
And so he was one of the many unique textures that I brought into the game, which is like, what's that?
What was he playing?
He was playing something that was like a cymbalom, but it was a custom version that he made. It wasn't just the normal cymbalom. It was something that he made where he created these little metal feathers that he wore on his fingers, like a ring that stuck out like long fingernails, and he would actually bow the strings with them. So those are the kind of textures that I wanted to put to the game. I started immersing myself in all this different music and started picking and choosing, you know, like a painter choosing colors. And like, okay, I like this, and I like a little of this, and a little of this, and let's mix them all together and see what happens.
And you've always been a gamer, huh?
Yes, since the late 70s.
It's not always that common to find composers who write for games who actually are gamers.
These days, no, it's growing more into a really, you know, major commercial enterprise, and you got
yes.
a lot of Hollywood composers who are coming in, and it's
mm-hmm.
and they're wonderful, but it's more of a just like another film. It's like they treat it the way they treat everything else. Whereas I come from this almost fanboy sense of,
yeah.
you know, oh, I remember this game, I remember this, and I, oh my God, Metroid and Super Mario and this and Zelda,
yeah.
and you know, I have a vocabulary of video games that I bring to the music that I work on, and I think that passion and excitement and intricacy really helps me do something that's unique. Rather than just someone who's scoring it like any other music to picture.
So let's talk about your musical background a little bit and go ahead and let that take you into how you got into game music.
My musical background started literally when I was 5 years old. My mother was teaching piano. And one day I walked up to her and I heard her playing scales and something. And I'm like, Mom, can you show me how to do that? And that's where it started. So she taught me for 7 years until I could bear no longer to be taught by my mother as an eighth grader. But then I naturally gravitated, entering high school, and it wasn't very popular to be playing Beethoven and Chopin.
Right.
So I was kind of really gravitating towards, you know, the pop music and what all my friends were. And I had a wide variety of friends. I had friends that were into classic rock, and I had friends that were into disco, and I had friends that were into freestyle dance music, and I had friends that were into jazz fusion. You know, and hindsight is always 20/20, and I'm looking back now, I'm like, this is where it started, because I had equal doses of listening to Pink Floyd with my brother and his friends. My brothers were like in their 20s, and as well as I'm listening to some, you know, just brainless music cruising down in a Mustang GT on Central Avenue, boom, boom, you know.
Yeah.
And then as a 10-year-old, this is before VCRs, okay? So
okay.
One of my favorite composers back there was John Williams.
Uh-huh.
And my favorite movie of all time was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah.
Then, that opened up into Superman and E.T. and all these other incredible scores that he did. And as a kid, instead of going and buying baseball cards, I went and bought movie cards. I went to the, you know, the candy store there, and mm-hmm. they had movie cards. So they had, I bought Raiders of the Lost Ark cards, and I,
cool.
my parents got me the actual vinyl soundtrack of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And what I would start to do is collect these cards, and I'd put them chronologically, and I would listen to the whole album from beginning to end, like a slideshow, look at the cards,
yeah.
and it was my way of reliving the movie. That's what started getting me excited about composers and, like, how could it really touch me emotionally. But then fast forward, I kind of stopped listening ongoing to classical music and music to picture and orchestral stuff, and I got into the world of popular music.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a whole nother decade where my transition into games started, is that right around the year 2000 and 2001, games were evolving more rapidly and more rapidly. And that's when Halo came out, the Marty O'Donnell score for that. And I was playing games like Rainbow Six, and that's when I was playing Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing all these different games that started becoming less bleeps and bloops and Super Mario-like and mm-hmm. started becoming more, for me, emotionally engaging. And at the same time, I was starting to get bored with pop music. It was the time where the manufactured group started coming out. And that's when I lost interest, because I'm not a cookie cutter kind of guy. And when I started hearing what games were doing, I'm like, oh my God, the creative freedom, look at that. So right there and then I said, this is it. The light bulb went off. I went out to E3. And I went out to GDC, and I started introducing myself to this whole new world. But I also noticed one thing is that, you know, composers seem to be a dime a dozen, you know. But artists, you know, artists like Crystal Method or Prodigy, they wanted to license their music in the games. They wanted to have, you know. So I said, I know how to put a record together myself. I know how to produce things. I know how to remix things. I know how to completely engineer an entire project all by myself from beginning to end.
Yeah.
I said, I can make a whole album. I should become an artist. I will put on my Batman mask and become Atlas Plug. So I created a whole album's worth of music that I thought would be perfect for licensing in video games and TV and film. I connected with a publisher, and he started getting bites from Microsoft, who wanted to license 4 of the songs into a video game. I said, mm-hmm. oh my God, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put the whole record together, and now I'm Atlas Plug, and now I have a name and I have credits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it all started. First game I did with Manu Bichet, who was the same person who hired me for From Dust, I did Cold mm-hmm. Fear. That music was like industrial orchestral horror music. And then I did Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, and that was a modern military game. And mm-hmm. a lot of my sound that I'm known for, my hybrid orchestral, you know, electronic style came from that. But that was a first. And then I did Red Steel. That was a first. You know, getting asked to do Japanese,
sure.
hybrid, this, that was a first.
Yeah.
So I started developing that trust factor with him. So he just started hiring me for whatever.
Touched on this a little bit, but I do want to specifically ask you the question of how writing for video games is different from all these other projects that you've had the opportunity to do in your musical career.
You know, writing for games is all about supporting the experience of playing the game. And I came from a world of music being all about listening to the music. In other words, how do I fill this music with so many things that call interest to it and draw you into the music so you zone out the rest of the world.
Right.
So getting into the new headspace of, you want to support, you want to bring the game player into the immersive experience of playing the game where, yes, they tune out the rest of the world, but they're playing the game and the music is just kind of that catalyst that pulls them in and
sure.
starts creating the emotions that the game developer wants them to feel. And that's something that I can do in games that I can't really do as much in a lot of the other music that I did. Another huge aspect that is a big talking point whenever I give presentations talking about game music specifically compared to film music is that the technical aspects of game music, that you're dealing generally with smaller chunks of music and sometimes multi-layered kinds of music.
Yes. Like in From Dust, where there's
Very much so, like in From Dust, where you have these different layers that will be cross-faded or brought in at different times or on top of each other. You know, I sometimes compare it, if you were to make a visual, when you're scoring to a linear piece of music, like whether it be a film or whether it be a film trailer or a cutscene in a video game, you know, I'll put like a few circles representing pieces of music with arrows in a straight line connecting them. And I said that is, you know, linear music to picture. And now I go to the next slide, and this is games. And I have circles all over the screen with arrows going in all different directions and curving back to the beginning like a crazy flow chart.
Sure.
And I said, this is games, you know, and people laugh, but it's true.
It's totally true, yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's a bit overwhelming and intimidating for people who don't come from that world to think about it.
Yeah.
But then when you break it down, it really comes down to the music. I don't like the technical aspects of music to compromise the artistic and creative aspects because at the end of the day, you want to feel it. You want to enjoy it. It needs to pull you in. And I like there to at least be something memorable and something unique about it where you close your eyes and within 5 seconds you know what game you're playing.
I love that. I love that feeling.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling. Can I get a witness in the house? Glory, 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 glory to God.
You've been listening to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese, and our technical director is Sam Keenan. We had additional technical support from Ben Pisht. Top Score comes to you each week from Public Radio Land here at Minnesota Public Radio. And we're a not-for-profit, so you can find information about how to give Top Score financial support of any kind at minnesotapublicradio.org. A special thank you from Top Score goes to Michael Maisley for providing us with his music to include in the show, a track called Blue Flamingo off his album Symbolenium. Tom Salto will actually appear in an upcoming documentary about Michael. It's called Art Officially Favored, and that's coming out very soon. We love hearing your comments and questions at classicalmpr.org/topscore, and you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Top Score Podcast.
Oh, that's so delightful and charming. I didn't know you wrote that.